Q4 is coming and you need to get ready now. How would you like some help in getting the keywords you need to drive your private label and wholesale sales even higher? Sounds good, doesn't it? Well, getting those right keywords takes a lot of time, time that you just don't have. Well, I have the product for you. It's called Scope. Yep, Scope. Comes from the gang at Seller Lab, so you know you can trust it. Scope helps you optimize your listing based on the keywords that are actually helping your competitors sell their products. Yes, you get to see them. You want to get your listing in the best position to sell your products. After all, that's what we're here for, is to sell products. Jeff gave me a great offer for you. The first three keywords are free and $50 off an annual plan. That's the lowest price out there, and you get it because you're listening to my podcast. There's two simple ways to get it. Go to sellerlabs.com/momentum. There's a place to pop in a code. The code is momentum. So again, sellerlabs.com/momentum. Use the code word momentum. Or, even easier, text the phrase get scope. No space, just get scope to 44222 and follow the instructions. It's very, very simple. So text get scope to 44222. You're going to get three free keywords, $50 off. Great offer. Remember to tell Jeff I sent you.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 218, John Craig. You know, John runs a website called MySellerPal. And I met him at an Amazon Boost conference. And what was interesting to me is the more I talk with him, I could tell that the dude is smart. The dude is very smart. He is, you know, you've met software engineers or software programmers and that. They're one part. But he's got enterprise, you know, large level. That's a different skill set. When you're working on one piece, that's one thing. But when you're working on one piece, working on all the other pieces at simultaneously or interconnecting them, it's a different kind of thinking. And the dude has it. And so I was a little blown away with him. And so I'm going to let him pitch. I don't benefit in any way. So please don't think that I do. But I was still intrigued. And I think there's enough information here that you could put into your business. I think it's really valuable. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. I'm excited about today's guest because I'm intrigued, I think that's the right word I want to use, about time savings. And I'm always looking for a way to become a little more efficient. And it's clearly software. I mean, it's not like I'm going to get better or more athletic, more probably not going to get smarter at this point in my life. But I can use software to help fill in for things, especially if stuff I don't want to do. And so met this guy at Amazon Boost conference, and I was intrigued as the more I talked to him, and I thought, huh, interesting that software is getting that sophisticated. And this dude knows what he's talking about. John Craig from MySellerPal. Welcome, John.
Hi, it's great to be here. I loved being at Boost for meeting people like you and other sellers and everything like that. Some people complained about some of the content, but the relationships that I got from just being at that conference were just phenomenal. So I'm just really excited to be invited onto your podcast and listen to a whole bunch of episodes over the last weekend, and it's just phenomenal.
I appreciate that.
So thank you
that.
For the value you, that you're adding to the seller community.
I like to talk. If you haven't figured that out, I do like to talk. You know, I thought the conference was strong. I mean, I think, you know, it was definitely geared towards bringing new sellers into FBA. I get that because I still meet people that sell MF and don't want an FBA because they don't understand it or it's, you know, foreign to them. And so I get it. But there's value. I don't care where I go. I find value because I search, I seek, and I make sure that I understand it, even if it's just reinforcing some of the good behaviors I'm doing or stopping me from doing some of the bad behaviors that I'm doing, right? Because I know I do those too. So I think that if you have the right mindset, you'll get something from every event you go to. But I agree, there were a lot of people there, over 1,000 sellers. And man, I met some amazing, amazing people. So very cool.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And that was in your backyard. You're located in New Jersey in Asbury Park, which I've been to many, many times. And and so you were right at home. So MySellerPal is your company, and I'll let you pitch that in a little bit. And Steve doesn't benefit. Make sure everybody understands. I don't benefit. Again, I'm just bringing you something that I think is interesting that might be able to help you buy time. And I want to buy time in our business too. So that's why I'm interested in it. So, but John, you are a seller, but you worked for a foreign company. I mean, Barnes and Noble? I mean, that's like, what is that? I mean, it's funny. I saw one this weekend and I thought to myself, wow, they're still there. Very cool.
Yeah.
Last time I was in one, it was Half Toys. And I thought to myself, huh, that's unusual. I thought they were a bookstore, but they're now trying to be a toy store too. So walk me back though. Where did you get started? What did you go to school for?
So I'm a computer science guy. That's my main background. I went to school for computer science at Rowan University in New Jersey. I've been involved in technology. My brother is 11 years older than me, went to Stevens Institute, which is a big engineering school in New Jersey. So I had a computer when I was in second grade. I missed the bus.
Oh, my God.
a DEC. It was I don't even know what the acronym stands for, but a DEC system, green screen, engineering computer. And I remember missing the bus playing games on the green screen terminal back then. So my background is technology, computer science. And I've been involved. I guess the Barnes & Noble story starts with I was really good at e-commerce very early on, 98-ish. I got into the e-commerce game while I was working at
98. Now, wait a second. Let's just pause a second because we're in 2017. So it's almost 20 years.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. So yeah, so my story started back then. I was putting databases on the internet, which was what we termed it on as at that point. Basically, I was doing that while I was taking my computer science degree at Rowan, and you know, that was as e-commerce was starting to become kind of a thing. It's kind of fuzzy the timeline on that, but the skills that I got from working at that first computer job for 4 years as a very junior programmer, I was able to take those very refined skills and work and move that to BarnesandNoble.com around 99, 2000, 2001, and work at the fourth largest online retailer at that time on the internet.
Well, let's go back a second. You putting databases on. So what does that mean? Or I mean, were you putting buckets of data so people can then say, hey, I want a 2000 Nokia stapler, black. I mean, each one of those are little switches, right? They're little buckets, right? Is that the type of thing you were doing, was helping create those and then filling in the data for that?
Well, I guess
Make it easy for me. I'm not that smart,
yes.
Remember.
So I'll put it this way. I went to my computer science advisor, and I was making $12 an hour my freshman year of college. Off campus basically taking what, and he said, you're putting databases on the internet and you should be making at least $20 an hour. So to me, I was like, wow, that's a lot of money. I had lifeguard all through high school.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Minimum wage was probably only $5, right?
Yeah. It was nothing. So I could make $20 an hour and he said, you're putting he looked at it in the abstract, right? So I was basically taking, Access databases, I don't even remember if I was doing any SQL databases at the time, but I was basically tying that to HTML. So back then, just getting a web page up on the internet was a big deal, let alone having data drive the screen.
So you were connecting that HTML to each one of those little buckets and each one of those little choices and options.
Exactly. And that was you know, groundbreaking stuff back in 1998.
It's crazy to think of.
Yeah. The acceleration of the internet continues to, the acceleration is crazy. So, yeah, so that's where I started.
You know, it's interesting because now I could call you old because you've been out there for a while doing this, but you really are in between those old, those old giant machines, right? The old IBM giant machines, you're in the middle between them and you've been able to make the leap. A lot of guys and ladies who were the old school computer users can't make that transition, right? They just haven't been able because it's a different mindset, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the big thing was that I really caught the beginning of the wave of the internet.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
the consumer internet is that when I got on board, I wasn't doing, just computer applications that would sit on a single desktop. My passion has always been for the internet, connecting people on the internet. I had the third the third punk rock website that had ever been on online at the time back in high school. And
I
actually and I booked, and through that I started a band, I started a record label, and was able to book all of these shows. So I was, you know, I leveraged the power of the internet and connecting people and connecting the dots very early on. So I just really got it. It's just innate into my nature.
Well, I like the phrase you used, the consumer internet. I think that's a great example. I think that makes perfect sense, because it was there before, remember, way before Al Gore, but it was, institutional. And as you're saying, I think that's a great way to describe it. I think that's really smart. All right, yep. So you were doing that, and life was good. And then how do you make a transition to Barnes & Noble? Is that the $20 an hour thing, saying, hey, I got to go for more money?
Well, I was actually going to go. I took some time. I was working, and then I basically I talked to my computer science advisor, and I said, hey, I got this opportunity with the first company I worked for, and we were putting all these Fortune 500 companies online and actually creating their e-commerce stores. And I took a break. I took a hiatus from school, and I was actually going to go back to school. And so it was basically I was going to go. I was just looking at Dice.com back then, which was still exists now as far as I know, but it was a technology site for technology jobs. And I just looked for my skill set, and I just wanted to get something over the summer to, you know, save up a few thousand dollars and then go back to school and finish up my computer science degree. And I got basically a great opportunity at BarnesandNoble.com. And if you think I had this skill set in the technology stack that they were using. And I went up there, I interviewed, and I was just blown away that I walked in the hallways, and there were just rows and rows and rows of computers. Where the programmers and the business people worked were in the data center. Basically, you would see the computers up in New York City. So I was young, I wanted that kind of, the New York City vibe really just got me. It was a full-time job. It wasn't a consulting thing. So I decided that I took it on, and it was actually a very good move for my career, because I worked on the fourth largest online retailer at that time. Now, if we think about Amazon and books turned out to be a very, very good channel to onboard onto the internet for e-commerce companies. There was a lot of things that failed. Books turned out to be something that was very,
and
very
why?
Good.
Why is that?
I think it really just combined what the internet was really good at and what retail wasn't good at. Basically, in order to stock every SKU that you could potentially have for books, you would need a bookstore way bigger than any Barnes & Noble would be. So I think it combined what we see now with Amazon is just that vast selection that you can't get anywhere else, and being able to get it in a click. I think that that's really the crux of why that books is really just a really good was a really good match for early e-commerce.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think the volume of books, I mean, I haven't looked recently to see how many books Amazon has, how many varieties. I have to look at that. I know it's got to be millions, but yeah, like you're saying, can you imagine trying to stock them in a store, in a brick and mortar store in every community? It's impossible. It really is. Where sneakers, you know, I mean, it's not difficult to stock. I don't know how many variety of Nike sneakers there are in a given year that come out.
Right.
But because they're replacing the previous version, right, that makes sense, right? They get rid of the old ones, right? They liquidate those, they go, and the new ones come up. With books never go. You know, they might put a new version of it, right? I have a friend who's written a book. I think he's got like 5 or 6 versions of it as he updates the information. But the old one is still relevant in some way, most of it anyway. And so, yeah, that's interesting. They just never go anywhere. I think that's a good example. Toys struggle to try to fit that category, right? But I think they're kind of a mix of both, right? They stay and then they get replaced, right? So, yeah, I don't think toys... can you remember back when some of the companies that didn't make it, what they were trying to be? Do you remember any of them?
Sure. You know, there were so many different. There was a lot of things that would probably work today. A lot of people look at that bubble, and obviously there was overvaluation. I actually think that a lot of things were just too early to market.
Mm-hmm.
And the consumer wasn't ready. And the technology was really hard. So if I think about the companies that didn't that didn't make it at that time, you know, it's basically just people trying to create their own niches that outside of books. So pet food, the different things like that, anything that was a niche that didn't have a strong brand behind it, really didn't have the way to get the traffic, I guess, to their sites, which is always even a problem today. Traffic is one thing. The consumer demand for buying pet food, probably, for example, wasn't there at that time.
People and you also didn't have a cell phone, right? I mean, you didn't have this little magic thing. I mean, let's face it, most of our searching is done in our hand. I worked for a company that bought into food delivery, grocery delivery, back in 2002, 2003, or maybe 2001 in California, and it failed. It wasn't ready. Now how many of them are out there, right? There's a whole bunch of them out there, right? They just weren't ready because there was no, you had to go to an office to order it. You had, because you didn't have, you know, even, I guess they had clunky laptops, but it wasn't the prevalence that you have with your phone now. I think that to me is the thing that's so different. I agree with you. I wonder if anybody's ever gone back to those companies and said, now it's time to revive. I mean, has somebody gone back at every one of those and said, you know what? I wonder if there's money in that.
It'd probably be a good idea, because if you look back at some of those things, it was just not the right time. And this comes up a lot, and I'm very involved in the tech community here in New Jersey and the entrepreneurship community and tech. And it always comes up, are we in another tech bubble?
Yeah.
And I say absolutely not. We are finally at the point. We are finally at the point now that things are actually working. And actually, I agree with I agree with Bezos on many, many things. And one of the things that he says is that basically you want to be leaning towards the technology, like you want to be leaning towards where technology is going. And I was listening to some of your earlier podcast, just over the last couple of your podcasts, and just talking about how the projection of retail just going down and down and down. And it's retail is going exponentially down, whereas the internet continues to go up exponentially, and it's not stopping.
It's accelerating,
demand,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's accelerating, and consumer demand is not going away. We might hit another rough spot in the economy, but the consumer demand will continue to be there. It's just about where you're going to get things. So I feel like we're finally at the point where people are now comfortable. Just even if you think about 10 years ago, you know, people weren't online at the rate that they're on right now. I think we might talk about it later, but one of my passions is Facebook marketing, and that just the ability for small businesses to get in front of their ideal prospect right now. There's never been a time in history where you could roll out $100 over a month, and you could potentially start a business by getting your great idea in front of the perfect people who might want that.
The people that are likely to buy, instead of the mass media, right, which is when you had to go on, you know, television or radio or newspapers or whatever. You had to be on this. You had no other choice, right? And you had to hope that they were reading it in that particular way or watching that particular show. Now you can specifically say, wait, I want to get this age group, this income group, this geographic area, because they're around my store within X number of miles.
Yep.
You can really target it down. I agree with you. I mean, I think it's the opportunity. And so, you know, therefore, there are still industries that are getting disrupted, though. And I think that that's what's going to happen to the economy. When it takes a dip, it's because of the disruption that's still occurring in these old institutions. And those people are going to get unemployed if they haven't come up with a new skill set. So, you know, when a plant in New Jersey's notorious, right, a manufacturing company closes, where do those people all go to work? Well, it really affects that local community for a while. But then eventually, right, there's something that replaces it. I was just recently in New Jersey, and I'm shocked at the growth and the reusing, and some of those communities that were just dumps are just resurging because they've been taken over by new industry and new, you know, it's very exciting. I mean, I think it's exciting. I mean, are you still as excited about the computer industry as you were when you were a young pup back in 98, 99? I mean, are you still as excited?
It's a good question. I'm excited about more. I think I have a broader range of excitements. I was very narrow focused. When I worked at BarnesandNoble.com, for example, when I was in New York City, I'll come back, and I was living in New Brunswick with some friends who went to Rutgers University, and it was a decent, it was a close enough train ride, and I would fall asleep with my computer books. I would literally read design patterns and everything else under the sun, and it'd fall asleep with my computer books. So I was
nerd.
I was very focused on being the absolute expert on technology. So I was excited. I was excited at that point. I think that I see the excitement still. I guess in general, my excitement about opportunity is still, it's probably greater than it's ever been at this point. As far as being down in the weeds like I was before, and how I go about embracing that opportunity, I think a lot of people now, you don't have to be
right
a web programmer.
Right, that's the difference.
E-commerce store. That's the big thing.
Yeah, I get it. So back in the old day, you were the one creating the stuff. You don't have to now. You could use other tools to get you there, and you don't have to do every step of it. Well, that must mean that you can bring things to market faster. Is that reasonable?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hmm. And where we get into, maybe we'll get into it a little bit later, but that was where my seller pal, I saw a technology need in the market. I tested something out myself. I got something out in maybe a couple weeks and got to market with the very first, like, basically minimal viable product for something. And you can do that with so many things. Even if you think about like the Amazon space, if you're going the long route and you're ordering stuff overseas and so forth, and you see an opportunity, you could, if you really have been through the process a few times, you can get to market with a physical product within 6 weeks and be on Amazon within 6 weeks with something. If you see demand for something and you want to get to market, I'm sure some people are quicker than that. Some people are longer, but even in getting a physical product to the world right now, things have sped up so much because of the internet.
Enormously. I mean, I was at a private label retreat in Breckenridge, two months ago. And we left there on a Monday. That was a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or something like that. And people were identifying products they wanted to order to bring to market. We went from there to Vegas for a different trip for 3 days. By the time I got home on Wednesday or Thursday, the following week, I think four or five of those, I'll call them students, the people that went to that conference and that course, had already received from China, mind you, from China, they received their samples physically on their doorstep. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I didn't even get home and unpack my suitcase yet. And they were able to identify a potential product, get it, negotiate in some way, communicate effectively through other languages, pay a fee, right? Because they charge you a fee for samples, and get it delivered to their home all within less than a week.
Right.
I'm thinking, in today's, I mean, just imagine what it would have taken, even 3 years ago to do something like that.
And the game is, in a private label world, I mean, the game is, to be able to do that in the past, you needed to have boots on the ground, I'm not as familiar with the physical space, but I kind of have a general gist of what it would take. It's certainly not nearly as easy as it would be right now that anybody could do it.
Even like you're saying about computers, I mean, I know lots of people who are getting apps developed and they're getting them done in Russia or is it Bosnia or one of those over there. There's some particular location that seems to be heavy on that. But they could literally go on Fiverr or Upwork or whatever and locate somebody who has that skill set and communicate with them and actually have a product out sometimes within a couple days. I'm like, that's incredible with an app. I'm like, that's incredible to me that just didn't exist. So when did you, I mean, you were in Barnes & Noble. And so what was your role there?
All right. So the first year I wrote basically your account management portion, some pieces of the shopping cart, the checkout process.
That's a pretty big deal, dude. I mean, that's a big, giant, massive company.
Yeah, we're doing like 40,000 carts a day. It's a public company, so I think they were doing four. It's all the stuff was in whatever their K-12s or whatever the reports are. So I don't think I'm revealing anything that wasn't known. And at that time, I think we were doing like 40,000 carts a day.
That's 40,000 transactions, customers coming through with a shopping cart completion. 40,000 a day. That's a lot. What would have Amazon been doing at that time? Do you think?
They were Probably, I would imagine it's got to be like quadruple it because we were still the underdog back then.
Okay, so you're thinking they were doing 160,000, right? So big, yeah. But not terribly. It's not that big of a distance at that point.
Right. Yeah, which is crazy. So that was the first year I did. So I learned a lot about keeping stuff. My bread and butter has been doing enterprise software development, basically keeping stuff, developing software that needs to run under that is critical to running businesses. So that's kind of my sweet spot. So I was doing the shopping cart stuff there, and then I came back I did the back end. I moved. I went through 9/11, which was terrible, obviously, mm-hmm. And it was just a.
And you were in the city working.
Yeah, so I was in the city, and that was a big and. I had a friend that worked at the office as chief medical examiner, so
So this personally affected you.
Oh yeah, that was crazy. That was crazy. I don't know if you were in New York City during that time, but at all. But basically, you would go in, you would take the. I would take New Jersey Transit up, and you would every step of the way you would see printouts of people's loved ones mm-hmm. on the thing. If you've seen so and so, please call yourself. Like you could tell it was printed out on a printer, and this person went from spot to spot, to pole to doing whatever they possibly could.
Out of desperation.
Yeah. So I don't want to make this about 9/11, but that was what I was in there during that. And that was just, I was in the city. It was just a crazy.
And you
crazy
still
time.
Went into work the following week.
But yeah. Probably like a week or so after that.
Okay. And so you went in and you went to work.
Yeah. That was what you did. It was what you did. So that was, that was obviously a nuts time, but I actually didn't like the 9/11 had something to do with it, but also the commute, the rat race of commuting to New York City is just really, once you boil that, once you do all the metrics on it, it's not really worth it.
Right.
Especially when you potentially die going
yeah.
there. So,
yeah.
You know, that's
real.
That's part of it. So that's, you know, and I was in, you know, we were in New York City for FBA Boost, everything else. I'm not scared of going into the city necessarily, but it was just, between the commute and all those other kind of things, there was an opportunity to go down to New Jersey where one of the warehouses was and where they wrote all the software for doing when you place an order and it's got, 15 items in it, where do all those items come from?
Oh, okay. So this is still for Barnes & Noble.
Yep.
And so this would be at the warehouse piece because that, right, the shopping cart piece is one of it. But on the yep. back end, the logistics piece has got to be incredible.
Yeah, so I wrote all the software that integrated with all of these third-party warehouses, and what else did I do? We did this project. It was crazy. We did it back then. It's funny looking at things in hindsight because you're saying it's like I guess that was 2001. It's almost 16 years ago when we did this project right before I left there. That was for used books. Basically, this huge integration with all of these used book vendors at that time. So I did basically the fulfillment network for the second year that I was there, and really, really it was a great experience. It really paved the way for my career because I worked on so many mission critical systems at that point. So, and so when I wrote the credit card processing software there as well for actually like clearing all your credit cards, and once I saw the numbers at that piece as a programmer, I was like, that. I think that was the early seed of FBA for me, is because I saw how many millions of dollars of transactions were going through, and I said, I don't need much of this to replace my salary.
Just to wet my beak a little bit.
So that was kind of like my first taste of FBA, and so that was what I did and there was another part of FBA that planted the seed around that. Probably a couple years later, my dad would watch a lot of Charlie Rose. So when I would go back and visit him, Charlie Rose would always be on with another entrepreneur. And I remember Jeff Bezos was on and he spoke about it was the very, very beginning of FBA. And he talked about how sellers couldn't go on vacation because they needed to fulfill orders. And so they created this thing called FBA. And now their sellers could go on vacation and that Amazon would do the heavy lifting for them. And it was like really, really early. And it was really – so those kind of those two things planted seeds, but I didn't really follow through into it until about a year and a half ago. But we can get into that later. But that was my role at That was my, those were my roles at Barnes & Noble.
So you saw the potential. And so when did you jump right from Barnes & Noble into full-time selling? I mean, did you, you saw Barnes & Noble, I hate to say it, lose?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, were you there when they lost?
They were still kind of winning it in their own right. Compared to Amazon, they were losing.
Right.
But
well, that's what they, I mean. Only to them. I mean, I'm only comparing it to them. I mean, they did lose, right? They didn't pursue it to the extent that they could have, right? I imagine they could have bought Amazon way early on if they wanted to, right? They probably had enough money. So were you there when they lost? I mean, when the decision, I mean, could, you know, and it's easy. Like I, who is it? Dave Ramsey always says, you know, the guy who bought all the buggy whips the day before Henry Ford came out with the car lost, right? But it wasn't due to his fault. He just wasn't able to see, you know, read the market. I'm assuming that's a reasonable thing to say about Barnes & Noble, that, you know, they just didn't read, whoever was in charge at the time didn't read the market correctly, you know, based on the information they had or whatever held them back. But there was a point where they made a critical, even if it was a non-decision, there was a point. Were you there then when at that
I
point?
I would say that the strategy was wrong the entire time.
Oh.
So they were kind of losing the entire time, in my opinion.
Hmm.
There was many times we were chasing Amazon. There were the eyes were definitely on Amazon. I can't talk too much about it, but there was a lot of reaction. But in all fairness, nobody really understood the internet back then. I think that you can see what Jeff Bezos is saying about the Washington. I saw him at Recode, right? I think it's some tech conference that was within the last 6 months, and he bought the Washington Post, which I know is a controversial thing in some ways, I suppose.
The politics side of it, but the business side. Yeah.
The business side, one of the things that he says that I think is important to realize, and it's probably important to realize for a lot of FBA sellers, is that he says that the Washington Post needs to go from making a relatively large amount of money per transaction to a relatively small amount per transaction as their business model. And transitioning there is like that's going to be the key for them. And I think that there's a lot of things that Barnes & Noble probably didn't do right that Jeff Bezos just – I wouldn't say that Barnes & Noble did things wrong. Jeff Bezos just did a lot of things right.
A lot more things right.
So, you know, they didn't do necessarily wrong, but they also had a retail business, right? So you walk into a Barnes & Noble, their books are way overpriced. So compared to what you can do online, at least at that time, I haven't been –
Well, they have to because they have that infrastructure, right? That rent and that – you know, when you're renting in strip malls, massive strip malls – that's expensive real estate. Yeah. I mean, that's really expensive real estate. So you've got to cover that cost. I mean, that's an enormous amount of cost. And then it takes debt to do that. And so therefore, that's expensive, right? And then you got labor, right? All that labor is very expensive, whether they're busy or they're not. It's very expensive. So, you know, I can't blame them for charging what they charge. The problem is that they can't afford to do that anymore when lifestyles have changed and that. So I think what you said earlier on too was where people were much more comfortable purchasing. I mean, I think of my mother who can't, you know, she still was like, hey, could you buy this on Amazon for me? I'm like, yeah, I can. I mean, you could do it yourself. Well, I can't put my credit card in there, you know? I'm like, all right, I'll do it for you. But you know, when you're 70s, you know, that's a generational thing, right? We're here, we're just like, yeah, put it in because my credit card, it probably gets stolen. I'll just get another one and boom, we'll move on, right? You know, no big deal. All right, let's do this. I want to take a break. And when we come back, I want to finish your time at Barnes & Noble and then talk about how you eventually get into, you know, that seed was planted. We've already seen that how you get out and start selling on your own, because you're not an entrepreneur. I mean, maybe you are. Well, let's leave it there. Be right back.
All right.
I was talking to Karen Locker the other day from Solutions for E-Commerce. We all know she's a sponsor of my show. She pays me. I don't want to hide that, right? The other thing she reminded me, though, is that if you sign up for her service through my link, you get $50 off, right? You knew that. I forgot that she offers an inventory health assessment. I'm like, Karen, I probably should be talking about that valuable service. She's going to take a look through your inventory and help you figure it out. They're going to take care of your suppressed listings. You're tired of having stranded inventory? Is inventory getting lost? When's the last time you looked at your shipments to get them reconciled? How about refunds? Has that happened? Well, Karen takes care of all that for me. She's been doing it for almost 2 years. I pay the same rate you do, but I'm very, very pleased with the service. Two well-known guys in the area reach out to me saying, hey, you've been with her. Are you satisfied? I'm perfectly satisfied. And again, I can Messenger, I get the services I need. So it's solutions for e-commerce. The only way you're going to get that deal is using my code Momentum. I have a link on my website. You have to go there. If you're thinking about outsourcing that piece of your business, get your inventory looked at. Told you, the guy's really smart. You know, I let him pitch his stuff because I think there's value. If you're looking to buy time, it's interesting. We start talking about being sure to make sure you have a way to handle all these different things. The only way you can do that is cloning yourself, adding talent. Talent's expensive. So by using software, you know, and I'm not endorsing his only. I'm just saying that you've got to buy time. So talk to him, see if this is something that would work with you. But man, you know, assuming you can stay within terms of service, that's so important for me, right? Making sure that we do that. To me, it sounds like a very valuable tool. So many people I know, so many ads that I see on Facebook are affecting me. It makes me start to think, yeah, I could use that. It's funny how they're getting to me. And so if that's happening to you, then you can understand what this will do, what his software will do. And then I also let him pitch his other product too, with the PPC stuff. I think there's value there too. So, you know, take it for what it's worth, give it a shot, but talk with him. Let's go back into the podcast.
All right, we're back, and we're talking with John Craig and from MySellerPal, and we're talking about his experience. And it's very fascinating to me that you were able to be in that world, and you lived and breathed it. I mean, you were, I mean, the competitive juices, I'm sure, were flowing. You were going to help kick Amazon's butt, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's rare. You know, every person that works at that failing company still believes in the mission and really thinks they can do it. And, you know, market forces are market forces, right? They are what they are. And so, you know, nobody wants to go in losing, right? So you were there for that. That's really interesting to me. I appreciate the perspective.
Yeah.
So how long did you stay there?
I was only at Barnes & Noble for 2 years. It was a long 2 years.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm sure.
I was there for 2 years. And then I went out and I ended up going and working for Deloitte & Touche, a big accounting firm,
sure,
for a couple of years. Did some internet. I did some enterprise software for them, and then I started my consulting business in enterprise software, and I've done that for about 10 years after Deloitte. And so I basically build mission critical systems, just as I always have for my whole career.
Well, give me an example of what one would you have done on your own. You don't have to tell us the company, but I mean, give me an example of what somebody would have wanted and needed that they didn't have to pay a Deloitte & Touche, which would be a huge, expensive consulting company, right? So they want, yep, smaller. So what would be an example?
So one of my customers is a big player in the logistics space, and so I did their dispatching software, and I wrote algorithms that actually just got out into Google patents just now, just over the last couple of weeks. I saw them come out to basically optimize the thousands of decisions that are made about which vehicle should do what. And that was basically an optimization
exercise.
Wait,
there are thousands of decisions about a vehicle?
Think about doing thousands of trips a day, like an Uber.
Okay.
I won't speak about the particular company, but you can just think about it as Uber and fleets.
Okay.
Fleets of vehicles.
Right.
Anytime that you decide which vehicle, so just think about it in the Uber world. Anytime that you decide which Uber driver goes to which trip, that affects your margins, right? So deciding that thousands and thousands of times a day, just incrementally improving that to a small degree when you have thousands of transactions makes a huge difference.
Huge
on
difference.
Bottom line.
I remember the story about UPS not making a left turn. That somehow they wrote into their software not to make a left turn, because a left turn means there's delays, used gas, wasted time.
Yes.
And so everything's done on a right turn basis. And it's like, huh, when you hear that, you're like, oh, that kind of makes sense. But Jesus, who the heck thinks of that?
I laugh because that was the seed for this project. And I have spoken directly with Jack Levis, the guy who is the head of that project at UPS, many, many times.
That's funny.
Because he's involved in the logistics space. It's kind of like hey, I had this algorithm over here. He's like, wow, that's pretty awesome. And then they are at a much higher level of automation and sophistication. Like, they have 250 sensors on a truck at UPS. But that's true. That's exactly right. That you can make those kind of observations all day.
So let's take that into our world, right? Because we do need to speak about our world. In theory, there are lots of those. I mean, 250 is a pretty wild example, but there are lots of them in our world that we really need to start considering, because if I don't consider it, Joe down the street, who's an Amazon seller, is considering it, correct?
Absolutely. And that's kind of the seed. That's a seed for what I'm doing with sponsored products automation and optimization at this point right now. Which we could talk about later.
Well, no, I want to get moving here. I'm going to let you start pitching, because remember, Steve doesn't benefit in any possible way, but you can tell by my conversation with John, and I'm talking to my listeners real quick, this is a smart dude who gets it and understands it. And so he has a service, and I'm going to let him pitch it and, you know, use it if you think that there's an opportunity for yourself. I'm not endorsing it. I'm not discrediting it. I'm concerned about terms of service, and we had a pre-conversation to make sure that we stay. I don't want to ever suggest somebody get out. Do not build your business not following a company that you use their terms of service, their wheelhouse. You've got to do what they say. You know, is it reasonable all the time? No, but they're a big machine, and moving a big machine takes time. But play within the sandbox that they give you and take full advantage right up to the walls, but don't break their terms of service. I don't think that that's a healthy business model. And you agreed with me, and I really appreciate that. Hence the reason that we're continuing that conversation, because that's so important. So one of the things that, because I was intrigued about what My Seller Pal does, and like, I love what you're, because you're a big Facebook guy, right? You're saying, hey, Steve, and Pinterest is even a better example, because my wife loves to pin. Her and her friends, man, they pin, right? They're, you know, she won't make a meal anymore. I mean, we don't even own a cookbook anymore. I mean, that's fascinating. I mean, that's a good example, though. Yeah. She will go to Pinterest to find a meal where she used to have a cookbook. They're gone. Matter of fact, she has a new recipe for something else because it showed her the calories. It gave her all the details she needed, and she got it off of Pinterest just this morning. And it's like really interesting. But your example is you can use those tools to drive sales to my Amazon store, right?
That's right.
I mean, that's a big deal, because that's ultimately, you know, I mean, we're relying on Amazon to bring us the traffic. But there are a lot of people selling garlic peelers, right? Or, you know, or silicone gloves, right? So how do they get to see mine versus someone else's? You're saying you can use Pinterest or Facebook or any of the other social media tools to bring them there, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. So My Seller Pal, basically, I have two portions of it.
Well, let's talk that part first, the social media piece.
Okay. So social media piece. Basically, if you put your product on Amazon, you have zero reviews, you're down at BSR, 3 million
if you're lucky,
on Amazon.
If you're lucky.
Right? You go on there and you say, all right, where the heck do I start? And now I need reviews. Before, I used to be able to go on to Facebook groups, or I used to be able to go use services that would
I used to be able to buy my – let's be honest. People used to be able to buy a review. They'd give it to you for free, or they'd pay you to take it, knowing that you had to give them a positive review. That was the way it was done. And, you know, I guess if everybody was honest and they were real honest about it, it was probably working way back in the day. And then, you know, like anything else, marketers ruin everything. And it gets bad, right? People start taking advantage of it, and they're fake, right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So the October 2016 I as everyone knows or should know, if you're a new seller, then this might be new to you. But basically, Amazon came down with a change of terms of service that you can no longer do the review and free product for or discounted product.
Quid pro quo, right? Yeah, can't do it, right? You can't do something for something. It was free, but well, wink, wink, nod, nod, give me a good review, right? That was really what it was. And that's wrong. I mean, because it isn't honest, because – you know, I don't know about you, but my kids, they live by reviews. They won't even go out to a restaurant. Oh, Yelp says this, or, you know, the product, oh, I'm only buying this one. They got a great review. I mean, that's their life. They have been trained that way. Yep. Fascinating to me. So it needed to change. And so it did.
Yep. Yeah. So I saw the opportunity that then everyone was just kind of stuck, and all of the Amazon seller Facebook groups and everything else are just like, well, what the heck do we do? So I had a new SKU that was coming in, and my hypothesis was, if I create a landing page that has my product on it, I give a discount for that product, and I promote it to people. Now, here's the very important part. If I target my product to people who are likely to love my product to begin with, people who are passionate.
So pet lovers, right? I mean, that would be an example, right? They would like pet-friendly things, not pet cages or, you know, pet restraints, right? You know,
exactly.
Right, that's kind of an example, a little extreme, but I mean, it makes sense.
Yep. So you can go – the opportunity that you have with Facebook right now is that you can dial those demographics in precisely. You can go in and you can target a Facebook ad at pet lovers who like Amazon, who also some of the other things I've tried to teach some of the my customers for my seller pal is that for interest, you want to try to find people who are really raging fans of that. So if you can find influencers that have big pages on Facebook that you can target in the ad copy too, that only people who are really passionate about or topics of interest that people are really passionate about, and get your product in front of them. You don't have to worry about people finding it on Amazon. You bring your product to them. And that's the opportunity now with some of the things tactically that I've had that I've basically come to from thousands of sellers going through through the system and doing discount codes and everything is I've had to educate people on Facebook because a lot of people haven't really used Facebook before. But I can talk about some high level kind of concepts of what people should think about, whether they use my software or anything else in the way that they can think about for Facebook marketing. I'd be happy to
go for it. Share. I mean, well, I think it's logical. I want to make sure people get this. I mean, to me, you know, and I don't know if it's apparent to you, I'm sitting here thinking about you. You explained your whole career and all the different things. And I think about the punk rock thing and all the different things that you've been able to do all that time. You've been doing this on your own. And then now you got this new software, Facebook, that allows you to do it. And you've been able to just take advantage. I mean, that, quite frankly, that's really what it is. You were able to take advantage of it because you saw that they did a lot of the work for you, of the stuff that you needed to get, and you were able to connect the two. And to me, that's the genius, and that's why you're in that sweet spot right there where you're at. That's why it's working.
Yeah, that's why it works. And that's the beautiful thing is that there is this opportunity to reach your ideal customer with a couple bucks a day of you adjust your budget accordingly, but you could put $5 a day on Facebook and get your product in front of the absolute perfect customer for your product. You don't have to wait around for them to come. Now, where you would have, I guess, a slight against other ways about going about this, like if you were to put your product on just a generic deal site of some sort, you're not getting it in front of your ideal prospect necessarily. You're not
right. They are people that are, you know, looking for deals, but they are not pet lovers.
Exactly.
Compassionate about. And that, I get what you're saying. So they're deal watchers, but they're not necessarily pet lover deal watchers.
Yeah. And that was my hypothesis. I put up a landing page to test one of my new SKUs. And I said, let me try this. And I basically gave it away for a buck on Facebook. I don't remember the exact stats. I have a Medium article that for launching that I have that has the exact stats. I think it was around for $12.98 in Facebook spend. I don't remember. I think I sold eight items on Amazon, something very low. But I actually got two reviews back from that, and that was following up through the email system through Amazon's email system. I have a better process that I follow now to basically target those people on Facebook again with an ad who have taken the code. I can talk about that, but basically...
Well, but let's make sure we're important here. I want to make sure we understand, because I was very concerned about the terms of service. I do not want to encourage this. If there's a way that this is outside the terms of service, I do not encourage it. But it was clear you were bringing a new customer to Amazon.
That's right.
You were bringing your customer, quite frankly, your customer to Amazon instead of saying, hey... this isn't coming out of Steve's or John's garage anymore. It's now coming out. I'm using Amazon to fulfill it for me, in essence. And so therefore, I'm saying, hey, or you don't have your brick and mortar. I'm directing you there, but you're still my customer. And so therefore, I have the right to communicate with you because you're my customer because you follow my link in. That's the, That's the semantics, right? That's the line that we're walking on right there. We're carefully treading, right? Because that's your really, quite frankly, it really is your customer. You're not going to Amazon customers and saying, hey, I found you bought a book on Amazon somewhere, and now I'm marketing to you backwards. That would be dead set against their terms of service for a lot of reasons, right? They're their customers. So yes. I think this makes sense to me. Okay, go ahead. I just want to make sure we're clear on that.
Yes, and I tell all of my customers, my SellerPal customers, that never ask for a review up front. I put it all over my site. Never in any articles that I write or anything like that. Never ask for a review in exchange as a terminology. But and then follow. Number one, have a great product and follow up and provide great customer service. But this is a way to. You began the show with saving time. This is a way to accelerate the process. Accelerate the process in the beginning is getting your customer, you're getting your product in front of your ideal customers. Now, if you were to do this with PPC alone, with sponsored products, it'd lower your price and do sponsored products, which I do have tools for as well. I feel like that beginning part of the process, I want to control that initial part of the conversation because God forbid, I actually had a product problem with one of my later products. And I using this process that I'm talking about, I had a sizing problem. So I have a bunch of things in apparel. I have a bunch of the different things. I have various different.
I want to make sure we're clear. You are a seller too. I just want to be clear about that. You are a seller. You still sell. And people need to understand that. So go ahead. All right, keep going. Sorry.
Yep. So I had a product problem, not with that first test that I ran that I got the reviews with, which was just kind of like my test bed, but I had a product problem. And since I used just PPC and lowered price or anything like that, I have no way of communicating that customer other than through the Amazon email system. And even there, it's like a crapshoot. So I was able to then take basically the landing pages give you my SellerPal gives you the ability to drop a Facebook pixel. And everybody who doesn't know what that is, it basically Facebook gives you this little snippet of code that you can just copy paste into my SellerPal. And then it gives you the ability to create more ads for anybody who has visited your page or has taken a code on the page and hit them with a very specific ad. So what I was able to do was take the people who had taken my code. It doesn't guarantee that they bought it on Amazon because you just can't get that data one for one. But I was able to target all of the people who had taken my code and say, hey, if you had a sizing issue with this, I shot a selfie video and showed my product, said, hey, if you had a sizing problem with this, we screwed up our sizing chart, I'd be happy to replace it for you. Just inbox me and I'll take care of you. Right. So that worked wonderfully. There's a book called The Complaint is a Gift. That I listened to because I was like, oh man, I have a product problem and I'm gonna have some complaints. And it could have been disaster. I had 1,000 units. I had 1,000 units here, and it could have been a complete disaster. It had to come in. What it turned out to be was a beautiful blessing. I was able to reach out and provide. People were blown away. Like that's just not a normal way of acting with customers in this world, to be able to proactively reach out to them with an issue and then. I said, you know, don't return it. I sent them free ones. And then I got a barrage of 5-star reviews from a product problem using this process by providing that great customer service. Had I just launched within Amazon and lowered price.
Oh, you would have been devastated. Your account would have been shut down. So again, let's be clear on this. You weren't asking for a review. You weren't doing anything. You were like, oh man, I got a problem. I've got to get ahead of my problem. And this gave you the ability to, because again, these were your customers that you brought you were using Amazon as your marketplace to sell, but these were your customers, and because you were proactive there. And again, this does not violate their terms of service, even though they've changed them today, correct?
Yep. As far as my interpret, everyone can interpret them the way that they want. The way that I interpret the terms of service is if you're allowed to give discounts, says mm-hmm. that explicitly, yep. mm-hmm. and you're not allowed to give products away in exchange for reviews. So, in my opinion, as long as you're not asking for a review in exchange for that product, I do use terminology on my pages to say like this is a new product to kind of frame the
right. No, I get that.
Customer.
But contextually, you're careful in your wording. But again, you're basically saying these are people who are excited about. you know, athletic clothing to begin yep. with. So if it's crap, they're going to say it's crap. I mean, that's the that's reality right. of it. And that's not bad. I mean, and the good news for you is in this scenario, because you're proactively staying ahead of it, if it was crap because of a sizing issue, you were able to fix it. If it's crap yep. because it tears or whatever else, I mean, that's a different story. But because it was, that wasn't the issue. It was just because you guys screwed up. You yep. were able to fix it. Man, I'm telling you that you would, you're, like you said, your account would have been shut down for sure.
Definitely. I would have had, my order defect rate would have been through the roof, and I yep. I would have been sitting with a thousand SKUs in my basement saying, trying to figure out where the heck I was going to sell them.
Yep. And you wouldn't have, and they would have been a sizing problem. So they would have been always, yeah. So you yep. figured this out. You made this connection. You realize, huh, if this works for me because you solved a problem you had, there are probably other people with the same issue, right? Yep, hence a business.
Right. That's right. You know, the entrepreneurial spirit. So I actually had code that I had written. I was too early to market on a Facebook A/B testing software that I wrote a whole landing page platform for Facebook marketing and A/B testing, but it launched it about 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it was too early to market. So basically I took that code base that I had, tied it in so you could just put your ASIN in and get one click and just have a turnkey landing page from your listing, tied in the things that were specific to Amazon on this landing page creation software, and got to market in a couple weeks. Focused on just, you know, trying to, one of the big things for me was trying to educate my customers who had potentially never used Facebook before. I saw some early mistakes where some people were having success, and some things that they ran into that they needed to do, which I can get into, like protecting inventory, for example. Like if you have a really good offer that's converting really well, you want to protect your inventory. That's a huge thing when you're doing giveaways. So any listeners that have not gone.
So what does that explain? What do you mean by that? So that doesn't all get reserved because it, you know, the code, everybody takes advantage, or what? Give me an example.
Yeah. So if a lot of people will do, you know, $1 to $5 kind of price points, depending on their product to do these initial launches.
So the product sells for $20 and yep. I let you buy it for $1 or $5, right?
Yep. Okay. Exactly. So Amazon, with many of their changes over the last year, one of the things that they did away with was the dollar off discount, and they only allow you to do percentage off discount.
Right.
So if you do percentage off discount and you do a 97% off discount to bring it down to a buck, and there, you can limit that to one redemption per customer, but that does not limit how many units they can take.
Right, and that's a big deal. Lots of people have been burned in this one. This is one that a lot of people have been burned in.
Yeah, so listeners, if you're doing a deep discount, whether it be on my platform or anybody else's platform, protect your inventory. So the two ways to protect it, I like multiple levels of protection. Ideally, I would like to not have all my inventory in the warehouse. The other thing that you want to do is you can place what's called a multi-channel fulfillment order on hold.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do a multi-channel fulfillment order, you can go through and you can say reserve 300 of my items, and then instead of shipping it to someone, there's a checkbox at the very last step of the process that says put this inventory on hold for 2 weeks.
So let's just make sure people understand what we're saying. So yep. they got 400 units in the warehouse. They want to give away 100 of them, and not give away. They want to deeply discount 100 of them, not yep. all 400 of them. So by doing what he's saying, which is to multi-channel fulfill and put 300 of them on reserve, it kind of stops. It'll shut down automatically at 100. It'll be like, that's all you see. Is that what customers can see? Like if you ever did the 999, all you could see is yep. 100 in that scenario? Okay. And so the 100...
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So the other 300 would not show because they were in reserve, right? So the 100 get done, it's over, and then you can release it without having the delay of trying to get your inventory in. You want to stay because the key is you just got a huge improvement in velocity because you just yep. sold 100 units, right? Your velocity improved. You've got to take advantage of that by having your inventory. Then it's basically like, okay, the discount codes are over, right? You turned it off or whatever, however the campaign ends. Then you uncheck that MCF thing, right? And yep. boom, magically 300 show up, and the velocity, you're able to fulfill the velocity, keep it going, right? Is that kind of the whole?
That's right.
Okay. Okay.
So then there's another layer of protection that's important, though. So I like to have multiple layers of protection, you know, in case of something screws up. So the very final one that you can do, and actually I talked to, I'm not sure the executive's name that gave the FBI Boost. She was I guess the PM of the discounts at Amazon, but there were some questions afterwards on how you can do this, and the same topic came up and the same solution came up, which is to limit the max order quantity for your SKU. And you can do that. It used to be that you could just do it for some SKUs within the user interface on Amazon, or some ASINs depending on the category within the user interface. That may have changed recently, but what I suggest my customers to do, I didn't want to get into the business of protecting inventory, but Seller Labs offers a tool called Max. It's Max by Seller Labs, and it's free. So I just direct everyone there to, if they don't have the option within their Amazon user interface for their category to do max order quantity. So that makes it so that a customer can only order, say 3 items or 2 items or whatever you feel comfortable with per order. That closes the gap. And the Amazon executive that was there, she actually said that was the solution. It was a roundabout way. They were aware of the issue. It's on their backlog. She did say it was on their backlog to fix that.
But it's a real issue, and if you're launching products frequently, you've got to pay attention. And you have so many things to pay attention to. These are the kind of things. I had a friend who lost $20,000 by doing this, right? Because of this very issue, he lost $20,000. And so it's a real issue that you have to pay attention to. And so by, like you're saying, safeguarding, you're really going to protect it. So when you look at the users that are using MySellerPal with the social media marketing point, what's your sales pitch to them? What do you say to them? Hey, here's a reasonable expectation my clients have seen, or and I'm letting them pitch. And again, Steve doesn't benefit, but you hear the knowledge that he's talking about. It makes perfect sense, right? Again, I think the cat or the pet thing is a great example. We're going after passionate people about these particular products who are likely to be passionate. Therefore, you're going to get reviews because these people are going to tell it like it is because they know the products or they know that category and they love it and they happen to love Amazon and they happen to be the right age or material demographic, whatever it is, right? So you've given it all that. What do you tell people that are reasonable, what they could see with their business?
Oh, that's a good question. A reasonable return on the business. I actually don't.
Because we don't want to do it. You're not free, right? You do charge for your stuff, right? Yep. So there's got to be a reason. I should be able to expect some kind of return.
Yep. So basically, the return is that you're able. The return is that you're able to take advantage of the opportunity. I cannot guarantee anything because there are a lot of factors in play. Mm-hmm. If I were to guarantee something, that would be
The product could suck. Let's face it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be
snake oil on my side. Now there's people who I've seen guys, I consider myself an expert Facebook marketer. I actually do some stuff for some of my clients now, and even with my enterprise consulting for software, they're like I just closed a huge slew of B2B leads, which in a niche that is really, really hard. So I consider that I know my stuff really, really well. I've seen other sellers. I don't check everyone's pages because it's just gotten too big now at this point for me to be able to like look in at everybody. But I have seen early on some guys who blew me away as far as what they were doing. Beautiful offer. And I saw one guy who actually had a $100 product who was doing it at $20, but he had a great Facebook page. His targeting was awesome. He had a really passionate niche, but he had just created the page. It wasn't like he had built it up. And he did wonderfully. I think he was showing me his metrics. And again, I'll put a disclaimer, like these results are not typical or whatever it is that we need for the government, but I just a case study, looking at him, I think he pulled in something like, I'm trying to remember exactly because it was so early on. He had like 17 or 18 reviews, but he blew through 100 products on Facebook within a week, and he got 17 or 18 reviews. Now,
that's a huge percentage. 18% is like unheard of.
Yeah. So he got, but he was really good, right? So he.
So that's possible. I mean, that's the maybe an outlier, but that's somebody who really did it right.
He did it right because he basically, if you think about it, okay, you got if you saw something on Facebook that. If you thought about any of your passions, if you could picture those in your head.
I think
head
of
right
Smooth.
Now.
This thing that's been following me on Facebook forever, this guy's marketing to me. Smooth. Yeah. S-M-O-V-E, because I'm into, video and recording, right? Where my podcasts and stuff. And so I'd like to have a camera when I do a public talk, follow me on stage and record it. And so then I can use it in my podcast. It makes perfect sense. That damn Smooth thing where you can walk through and it moves perfectly and it never, I'm seeing it everywhere. There's somebody who's doing it right. They're getting to me, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's somebody who's doing it, right?
So, and imagine you saw an offer on Facebook that offered, that's a physical camera, right?
Right. It's a physical attachment that goes to a camera that allows you to swing perfectly and smooth.
So say he was coming out with like a new product. He was launching on Amazon. He hit you up with an offer to get that thing for $5. Let's even say it was $5. Mm-hmm. And you bought it on Amazon. You got it. It was a good product. And then he was retargeting you with a Facebook ad that said, with a selfie video, hey, did you get the Smooth? Just leave a comment below and how did you like it? We really just want to hear your feedback. Is that something that you think that you might comment on?
Absolutely, man, dude. I'll be all over it because it's something that clearly I think I need. He's convinced me over time, and then I got it for an unbelievable deal. I feel like I robbed the poor guy, right? Yeah, I'd do a review because I'm interested. Now, if it was a piece of crap, I'll be honest with you. I'll be the guy that'll be right there saying, this thing is so cheap, don't buy it. You know, I'm brutal that way.
Well, I have a friend that does some major label recording. He's a sound engineer for doing major label recordings and everything like that. And I forget his phrase. It was something like, you can't put lipstick on a pig.
Yeah,
or whatever it is, whatever that phrase is. So, if you have a terrible product, then you got a terrible product. There's no solving that. So you have one of the big epiphanies over time with the physical product business is that you have to have a great product. The problem that I'm trying to help people with is expediting getting that great product in front of passionate users.
Well, and I think that the thing that I like, you're solving the landing page. I don't need to learn how to program to create a landing page, right? I don't need to learn the HTML because you do that for me. That's part of my fitness or my fitness pal, my seller pal. Gattel, I use that too. So by my seller pal, you'll actually create the landing page for me, and that's a big deal. And that's what's really, really important because then it's, do you give examples of best, how to get how to get it to look the best, that kind of thing? I mean, is it templated like that?
So it's one click and basically it's optimized for getting your offer to people. So we have one template right now, but it works across, it is very, very refined for mobile experiences and all the different devices that it can go onto. Mm-hmm. So basically, what matters the most when you're marketing on Facebook is your targeting and your offer. Everything else, copywriting and how something looks and feels like the pages are just very, very basic, clear. It's meant for them to come in, understand your offer, and then go to Amazon. Mm-hmm. So it's very focused on speed and performance. So you don't have to think about much. You just have to basically tweak your description and everything, and everything comes out optimized. It's like for Google page speed, it loads, I think, under a half a second. There's a lot of optimizations that have gone into it. It's the data is loaded geographically across the United States. So there's all kinds of things you don't have to think about that I do the heavy lifting for.
You're an enterprise level programmer. So you're thinking of that whole, that's something to pull back from as I sit back and listen to you talk. You're not small thinking. You're thinking it through all the way through because, again, as you were talking, enterprise critical. I mean, this stuff has got it's got to scale all across the U.S., not just in New Jersey.
Yep.
Smart, dude. Smart. Told you. That's why I have this guy on. This is smart. So, I don't want to go too long because the long interviews, I might have to bring you back actually about your sponsor product. You're going to give me the 2-minute version of what your dashboard is. Because again, I think this is another powerful tool. Again, you could do this you don't need this software to do this, right? For what he's going to talk about. You can absolutely figure it out on your own. Okay.
Yep.
So yes. It's like watching YouTube. You could go learn how to sell on Amazon by watching YouTube videos, or you can pay a coach and get courses and stuff like that. I believe in doing that because my time is just limited and I'm old and I know I'm going to die eventually, so I got to go faster. So yep. In this scenario, again, what he's going to talk about, you can do it on your own. You don't need to pay him for this service. However, he does fill a need that I can see. So go ahead. Now you got 2 minutes to pitch your stuff there.
Yeah, so sponsored products. So if we think about like that UPS left turn thing, mm-hmm. the big takeaway in general is small improvements add up, mm-hmm. right? So
yeah, there's no home run swings that everybody's done those, right? The easy stuff is done. It's got to be all these small little adjustments.
Small little adjustments, and like they really do add up. Compounding interest, you know, that the concept of things stacking up is really the core concept that I want the listeners to think about. Like when you have a 20% improvement and then you add in a 20% improvement and then a 20% improvement, you get the doubling either your sales or anything like that. So that's kind of the core concept. So sponsored products, when you're paying for clicks on sponsored product, a customer search for something on Amazon and they've clicked on your ad and they either convert or they don't. Right. So the big meat, and you could be running auto campaigns or manual campaigns, doesn't really matter. What you need to do is you need to go in and you need to look at the terms that are actually converting for you and adjust accordingly. So what my Seller Pal does, so let's take the manual approach of what you could potentially do to do this. What you can go in right now is you can go into Seller Central, you could download your search term report, you could dump it into Excel. You could filter. Create filter.
Or pivot, pivot
tables. Pivot tables, all those kind of things in Excel, and dig into your terms and figure out which ones are not making sales, which ones are making sales, doing your ACOS and all that kind of stuff and going through there. And lots of people do that, but they certainly are not doing it nearly as frequently as they probably should.
Because life happens. It will happen. Happens. Life will happen to you.
Yes, and optimizing PPC search terms is probably pretty low on, even though it's incredibly important for your business, it's really it's time consuming and everything else. So basically what my Seller Pal does at this point, I'm trying to become an all-in-one marketing tool for a seller for the full life cycle of your product. So what it does right now, the very first thing that it does is per parent ASIN, you can drill down and you immediately get your search terms there with basically a filtering interface that has all of your terms ready to go, where you can filter on, which products have made me no sales that I've spent money on,
right.
And show me the things that have cost me the.
So you're basically doing what I would have been able to do by downloading the report and downloading it. When I click on my Seller Pal, is it right up to date?
Yep. It updates every hour.
Okay. So every hour. So if I would be running, I could go and download the report every hour myself, bring it into Excel, filter or pivot, whichever one it works, and see whether I sold anything versus what I spent and all the margins in that. I could do that every hour myself by running that report and staying on it, or I could just click on my Seller Pal and it gives me the dashboard. And what I was interested, because this was in the pre-call too, is I want to make sure that I can adjust it for what's acceptable to me, because what's acceptable to me isn't necessarily what's acceptable to the other seller, right? I might take a different margin, or I might like something different because A, I'm buying it a better, whatever it is, I can customize it for me, as opposed, right? You're not going to tell me what it is. I get to choose.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's exactly right. And what I do on top of that now, this just launched last week, is I will email you some common sense reports. I haven't chosen the frequency that they got out. I've been manually triggering them for the people who are using the software. But basically, get in your phone, you don't even need to log into My Seller Pal, and you get basically reports of your top 15 terms that are making you no sales, that are costing you the most money.
Because that's where the opportunity is immediately.
Immediately, you go and you negative keyword those. You know those are those. That's like, boom! I got that. If I see something that's costing me $100 a day or whatever, that's not making me any sales, and I'm pretty confident that I should shut that off. I'm going to go in there. I didn't even have to log into the system to learn that.
And let me just see this. And this is now your fees are either $20, $55, or $165. Do I get that same level of service what you just described for the $20 a month fee?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. The tiers are based on
As you scale up, right, this scales up too. Your cost scales up. That makes sense to me. And so again, I hope people hear that. So I'll let him pitch that, because think about that. You need to be doing this. How many of us are doing it? That's really the issue. Is that, you know, when I sit there, you're the second service provider I've done interviewing today, and I sit back and I think about it's coming hot, faster and faster and faster. But the deal is, if you don't participate in this, your competitor is. And so therefore, they have a competitive advantage over you. And I'm not saying you should spend $1 zillion with a zillion different companies, but right now you need to buy time. And what's cool about this is it's a dashboard. When you look at a site, and I'm going to have the link there, but it's mysellerpal.com, he has an example of what the dashboard looks like. And it's very clean and very simple and very easy to look like. Do you have an example of what the email looks like or no?
I think there should be something on the homepage down. There's a let me just see real quick if it's on there, because it is a prototype. Let me see if I updated the main. It should be on the main homepage. If it's not, I will do it right after the call. It should be there. But it's basically, you know, an HTML table that dumps out your terms with your cost per click, your total cost. Yeah, there we go. So basically, it's an email that has your query.
Oh, there it is. Query. Yep, I see it. Yep. Okay.
Total cost, total sales, average cost per sale, the, you know, your bid, the impressions that it's getting, and all that good stuff.
And again, today I need to sign in to get that, but at some point I won't need to sign in.
The email, you can sign in and do the dashboard, like the manual filtering and all that kind of stuff. You can sign in and see that, but the emails are triggered. I just haven't tied it. I'm actually manually triggering them myself right now to get feedback from my current customers. But they will be automated basically this week. I'm going to put in an interval that you as a customer be able to say, I want this daily. I want this weekly. I work with a high level seller that, he blew out 24,000 units on Prime Day in the morning, and he said he would want it daily, but I know some people would potentially not want
it. Right, it'd be overkill. Seeing that every day would be no effect, right? You become oblivious to it because, he's got another one, right? And so
exactly.
It depends on the level, and I like the fact that you can do that. Okay, so I let you pitch, and so I want to do this now. So I'm going to close out. Right, I've been long enough. I gotta keep it short. But I want you to give me two best practices, and I'm gonna let you know, we'll put how to get in touch with you.
Yep.
But I want two best practices that people can go and put into their business. Doesn't have to be your software, but two best practices you've seen that people can do to grow their Amazon business today.
Two best practices for Amazon. Number one, the most important thing, and I know everyone probably realizes this, but by far the most important thing is to have a great quality product. You know, that by far, that changes, that makes everything so much easier. As having a great quality product. It's gonna make your ability to get reviews easier. And it seems common sense to me, but I just mention it because I'm not sure if it's common sense to everybody.
Well, I think people, you know, think about how passionately you've been about certain products. You will go out of your way, or a particular restaurant, right? You will drive all the way across town knowing you're going to get stuck in traffic. You'll wait 2 hours to get in because their product is that good, right?
Yes.
That's what the passion you want about, right? That people will find you one way or another, right? Because that, if you get that and then you make it easy for them to find you, oh my God, right?
Absolutely. Yes. That's one best practice. The other one that I would say is give before you take. And that in your Amazon business, it might seem like a weird one to say in an Amazon business, but I think it's universal in business, but I think it really works with the Amazon business really, really well. And I've gotten my best feedback for that. So I talked about earlier about how I just basically gave refunds, was proactive about that. That was not free for me to go out and do an advertising campaign on Facebook and take returns and everything else. But I try to get, and someone emailed me that, they liked one of my products, but they wish they chose like the different color or something, you know, those kind of things. I always try to give first to all of my customers and provide a great customer service on my Amazon business. And that has always come back and paid off in spades. Number one, it's the right way to run a business. It's like,
It's a real business.
It's the right way. So give before you take is just a best practice, and it always pays off. Both of those things are long-term plays. So if you think more long-term, because if you launch an ASIN on Amazon, that thing could be around for, 5-10 years. Who knows how long it could be on there.
But you think about how many companies have started on Amazon, and now they're names that you know, and you've never seen them anywhere else because they only started there. And that's the opportunity. I mean, that's just so exciting. Dude, good advice. All right, best way to get in touch with you. So I have john@mysellerpal.com. That's your email. I'm going to have that there. Any other way to get in touch with you?
Just the My Seller Pal. If you search on Facebook, I'm pretty active on Facebook.
Okay.
If you search on Facebook for My Seller Pal, just in the Facebook search, I'm sure it'll come up.
I'll have and that private link message, there too.
Yeah, private message me. You can private message on Facebook. I am trying to grow out a team a little bit more, but I personally respond to everything.
Okay.
At this point, so. So that's it. This was an awesome time.
I appreciate it. Well, you got some knowledge there, dude, and I know people are going to be sitting there saying, "All right, this dude's smart." And again, I think it's the enterprise thing. I mean, sit back and think about how long you've been doing this and the evolution, and you got to participate in it. It's a very exciting thing. You should be very. That's a very cool thing to have in your life. Very cool. Yeah. I appreciate it, man. I wish you nothing but success. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and good luck to everyone who listened.
It's interesting that John is a seller too. I think that gives you different perspective. I think that as long as he's careful, with your data and your, stuff, I think that that gives him the ability to be a working software engineer, meaning that stuff's happening to him too, so he can come up with ways to fix. And I think there's value in that. Well, ecommercemomentum.com. I hope you like these vendors that I'm having on, because I think you get exposed to see some of the stuff that's out there. The other thing I said in one of the other interviews, make sure you talk to these guys when you're at conferences, and don't only talk to them about their software. They've got knowledge in all what's going on in our industry. Make sure you take advantage of that. These guys like to talk. You might have to listen to their pitch, but then you get the rest of the story. So ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.